Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
It is time for Dear Science, and we're talking solar panels and sunlight.
We're talking about sunflowers.
Sunflowers. Wow. Oh, well, I really didn't look at it, did I?
No, it's okay. It's close. So sunflowers, right? When they're growing, yeah, you've got the big head of the sunflower. And if you've ever noticed, I mean, not that you look at sunflowers a lot, I guess, but when the sun moves across the sky, the sunflower moves the head, so it always sort of points to the sun. And this is sort of a property that would be really useful in solar cells. So yes, we are talking about
solar.
Yeah, this is something called phototropism, which I didn't know until today. And this is this ability of materials to respond to sunlight and actually sort of move and direct themselves towards the sun. And you think of solar cells, normally you get these big flat sort of plates of material, panel things, and they're static, they don't really move. And so when the sun moves across the sky, they become less efficient when the sun is sort of at an oblique angle to the solar panel. Mm. But if we could sort of easily orient the panel so they're always facing the sun, then you could potentially collect more sunlight and harvest more light.
That's amazing. Yeah. That also seems fairly...
Which is fairly logical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you do? Well, you could either put little motors that is using up energy to sort of move the panels, and that's sort of a bit wasteful and you're reducing sort of the efficiency of the whole process. Mm. Or you can use novel materials, new sort of two types of materials. And this is a report that was in one of the Nature journals recently about... a group in the US that have created these sort of cylinders, very small stem-like cylinders of materials that they've called these sunbots, and they can move and respond. They're just basically they look like a little straw, but very very small, and the head of the straw can move and point to where I'm moving my finger here to demonstrate this. It's not very good for radio, but they can move and point towards where the sun is or where the light source is. Okay, and these are made from a particular type of polymer that's been impregnated with something that responds really well to light. So they use little gold nanoparticles, and other materials can be used as well. And when the sun, or when you move a beam of light around these sunbots, the little head of the sunbot moves and points towards
Amazing.
The light, like a little, I don't know, caterpillar that's moving to the light.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is the idea, and you can make them in different ways. You can make them respond with hydrogels, so they sit in water, and they can do it in water as well. There's lots of different variants of these things now. And if you could convert these into a solar panel, so you stick a solar panel on the head or you do something like that, then potentially then you've got this idea of automatically moving the panel, moving that light harvesting collector to point towards the
brilliant.
Sun.
Brilliant. Yeah. That's brilliant.
So you'd make a sort of like a field of sunflowers, you'd have a field of these little sunbots.
Solar moving panels.
That's right.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
You'd need a really strong thing to stick it on though, right? If it's going to carry these heavy panels.
Well, I guess it wouldn't carry the panel, so you'd make the panels in a different way. Instead of having a big monolithic solar panel, you'd maybe coat the surface of this little sunbot sort of straw type thing, nano straw,
with
whatever it is. With the light harvesting material, and then wire it all up and do that.
That's
so you'd have
of course
a like
you'd
a
do that.
Just like a sunflower, you know. So the sunflowers collect sunlight, do the photosynthesis, you know, create their energy, and do it in a similar sort of way.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, we are talking about measles, which continues to be perhaps not an epidemic now. Are we sort of I don't know if you know what the current situation.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're on at epidemic levels, but we're certainly. Hitting greater levels of measles, reported measles cases, you know, in this year than we have in previous years and previous decades, I think, since people started really immunizing their children. And this is a story, again, that was reported in Science. There is bad news, again, if you haven't been immunized with the measles vaccine, or if you've had a measles infection, and it's a study that showed that in children a measles infection can wipe out the sort of the memory in your immune system. So most people, I think, know how vaguely how the immune system works. You get an infection, your body builds up antibodies to fight the infection, and then after that, you have a certain amount of immunity from that infection. So your immune system has this memory for previous previous infections that you've caught. But what they did, this study that they analyzed blood samples from unvaccinated children, I think 70 or 80 unvaccinated children. This is in the Netherlands. This was done before a measles outbreak. And they collected blood samples from a few children, or quite a few children, before and after their first vaccination against measles. And they analyzed all the antibodies that were found in these blood samples. And they found that the unvaccinated children, once they'd recovered from measles, they found that the virus had erased about up to 73% of the antibodies against other bacteria and viruses.
So not necessarily the measles antibodies.
So these kids recovered from measles.
Yeah. But it wiped
sort of a large proportion of the memory of their immune system.
So those kids would be prone to other illness.
Exactly. There was another study in macaque monkeys that found a similar 40 to 60% of the antibodies were wiped out. And this is really troubling, not because, you know, if you're not vaccinated, you're more susceptible to getting measles. But if you get measles, then you're more susceptible to getting lots of other things after you've recovered from the measles. And it is possible, you know, to rebuild your sort of suite of antibodies, your memory. Mm. But it means you have to be reinfected. And every time you're infected, you're sort of rolling the dice a little bit. How serious is this going to be?
Yeah.
And it could lead to other more long-term sort of chronic illnesses and chronic problems.
So is this specific to measles? Like this, there aren't other kind of diseases that do the same thing?
Well, this report was focusing on measles. I'm not aware if there are any other viruses that do this in particular, but certainly this seems pretty strong evidence that the measles virus does this.
So also, if you are vaccinated for measles, then, well, I'm going on a round, you're not ever going to be, or you're exposed to it, you recover, but then it doesn't affect you in a way that wipes your...
The kids who received the MMR vaccine with a measles component showed no reduction in the immune system antibodies.
At all. Wow. At all. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty clear. I mean, it was not a massive study. You know, less than 100 kids were tested. The blood samples were tested. But it was pretty strong evidence here, I think, that measles, you know, measles itself is dangerous.
Mm.
But obviously, this is an after effect. Once you've gotten over the measles, you've got potentially all these other problems.
Would that be a case or a study that they continue to do? Would they want to look into that further?
I would guess that this is now, you know, receiving much more study and people are looking at this because this measles. I mean, the whole issue involving vaccination and people not wanting their kids to be vaccinated. I mean, it's a big issue. And, you know, I've got two little kids and they go to daycare and I know there's been other kids in the daycare that have caught measles and been infected. And, you know, the last thing I want, my kids are up to date with their vaccines, but there's still, you know, a risk. Even if you are vaccinated, there's still a risk of catching measles, even if it's a sort of a low grade sort of illness. But
because if that study was to continue and they were to find, you know, just absolutely without a doubt that this is the case for everybody, wouldn't that, I don't know, go into, you'd find room or find space to put that into policy as a way of, even if it was to reduce hospital costs, right? Like if you're going to be more at risk to certain diseases because you've wiped your immunity that you've already got and then you, something like that. I don't know, I'm going down.
No, there. I mean, measles is a dangerous illness and people can die. And this is just piling on the evidence to get your kids vaccinated.
Mm. Somebody just texted in saying Big Pharma has reintroduced measles for more profits. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Last topic, Marcus.
Yes.
Talking about the structure of the solar system.
And this came up in the news the other day and I thought it was really interesting. So you've probably heard of the Voyager spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
There's two that were launched within a few days of each other in 1970, I'd like to say seven, but something like that. This is 42 years after their launch. So you do the math. 1977. That's right. 42. 1977. Mm. 42 years after the launch, they're still going, and they have gone way beyond the solar system, and they're out, sort of flying away in sort of the outer reaches of space. And they're still sending back measurements, so there's still telescopes that are trained on these probes, and they're getting these really, really weak radio signals back from the Voyager probes. And what they've been doing is they've been measuring basically where is the end of our solar system.
Whoa.
Okay, so the sun, well, it's, I guess, one measure of this. So the sun spits out a lot of energy, a lot of light, but it also spits out a lot of charged particles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ionized particles. And we're protected on this planet because we have a magnetic field that deflects all of these particles, so they sort of go around us and they don't get to us. Mm. But if you're in space, you know, you're exposed to these, and these just stream out from the sun. And as the further and further away you get from the sun, the weaker and weaker they get.
Right.
So you know, they get more and more diffuse. And at some point, that it meets up with all the swirling charged particles emanating from all the other stars in the galaxy, and there's a termination. So there's actually a border. If you're still in this sort of, it's called the heliosphere. If you're still in it, all the charged particles are coming from the sun, and if you're out of it, then the charged particles are coming from all directions.
Whoa.
Yeah. And what they wanted to do was to see if they could measure when the sort of flux of charged particles sort of changed.
Were they successful?
Yes.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah, and so what they've done is they've found where this heliosphere, this big bubble of space that contains all the charged particles that are sort of coming streaming from the sun, where it ends. And what they did is they found that the spacecraft measured a change between a hot, relatively hot, low density plasma characteristic of these particles coming mm-hmm. from the sun,
yeah.
And they emerged into a region where the plasma was cooler and a higher density, and that was expected for interstellar space.
Right.
And they've got this, and this boundary region is called the heliopause. It's sort of this end of the solar system, effectively, and they pass through it, and they've actually felt a really quite big jump between the density of this plasma, a factor of 20, I think, in the density of this plasma as they pass through it. So wow. It's quite a sharp boundary to the end,
amazing,
of the solar system.
So from that point, can we measure then how big as a sphere I would assume it would be?
Yeah, well, so they found that because the two spacecraft are actually going off in different directions.
Right.
They're not sort of next to each other flying out. They're quite sort of pointing in different directions. So they found that because they both occurred, they both went through this point at about the same distance from the sun.
Yeah.
And they think that this heliosphere is symmetrical, sort of around. Mm-hmm. So it probably looks like. So they're going through sort of the front of this bubble.
Yeah.
And so they think the bubble is sort of shaped a bit like a bullet with a sort of a rounded front, and it sort of trails
Whoa.
Out behind. Yeah.
That's hectic. Do we know how big?
Well, they are 10 billion miles from Earth right now. So on the order of 10 billion miles from here.
Amazing.
Yeah. But that's pretty cool. I mean, I just think it's incredible that 42 years after the launch, they're 10 billion miles away and we can still hear those little radio transmitters.
Also, that
they're
doing what they
were.
They're
still doing science.
Well, they're still doing science, but they're not necessarily doing what they got put out there to do, perhaps.
Well, I think this was part of their mission. They have instruments on boards that can measure these things.
To measure stuff,
yeah.
But nobody would have expected probably that they were going to measure where the solar system that we know stopped.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's amazing. Well, thank you so much, Marcus. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, see you soon.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.